W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net, which is run every week at this time on 146.955 K2ATN repeat, or as an alternative 146.79 repeat. In any case, anybody is welcome to participate. You do not need to be a Barra member. You need to have a license that allows you to transmit in the 2-meter band in these here United States of America. Before we begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, nothing heard. Very good. That's always good when there's no emergency or priority traffic. Tonight, we're going to have a... what's going on here? Here we go. I just want to get rid of the background noise. All right. So tonight, we'll have the TechNet, and the TechNet is designed to engage in conversation. It's just not, wizardry. It's not, black magic. It's amateur radio, electronics, communications, computers, anything in our society that depends on those things. Which means that pretty much you can talk about anything you want as long as you tie it back somehow. So we look forward to your participation. Again, you do not need to be a Barra member, although that's nice too. And we look forward to your joining in with the conversation. We would like you to check in whether or not you have a question. It's very important that you check in so that we know who's out there so we can kind of gauge our responses appropriately. Also, if a topic comes up that might be related to something that you've mentioned before, something you've been interested in, we'd like to be able to steer the conversation your way if that's possible. But we need to know you're there in order to make that a plausible, ploy, if you will, in the conversation. So, in order to begin, we're going to start with call signs that begin with November. Any call sign that begins with November, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, a comment, or none of the above.
This is NS2K Jim, and no question right at this point.
This is N2OEO, one question.
Kilo Bravo 2, Victor Bravo Yankee. No question.
Okay, KB2, Victor Bravo Yankee, your name, please?
Yeah, my name here is Chris.
Hi, Chris. Okay, very good. No problem. Alrighty, any other November stations, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question or comment, or none of the above. Something novel here. Let's see. We're going to try Alpha stations whose call signs begin with the letter A. Please call K2BAR. Alrighty. Stations whose call signs begin with Kilo. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above. And it's 3-2 Devils over the Ranger so far.
K2DSL, David. No question.
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB. No questions or comments at this time.
K2BAR, this is K2DEN, Denver. No questions, no comments.
Okay, we acknowledge K2DSL. Good evening, David. KC2PYB, good evening, Richard. And K2Delta Echo November. Hello, Denver. Good evening to you as well. Let's see, who else do we have? I guess that's all I have so far. So let's see who else. Any other kilos? All right, any whiskey stations?
This is W2JEK, Don, no question.
Okay, good evening, Don. Any other whiskeys? All right, I have a question as well, and I hope NS2K is going to be around for it because it will be most interesting to see what he has to say about my question, although my guess is there will be others as well. Maybe Noel has something to say. Anyway, Noel, you have the first question, so... Oh, I'm sorry. Before I go to that, are there any other stations wishing to check into the net at this time with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment to the net? Please call K2BAR.
Stewart, KCC. No questions, no comments.
I got a couple of stations in there. Stewart, KC2SQP, got you. Very good. And who was the other station? All right, guess not. Any other stations wanting to check in? All righty, well, then let's begin. Noel, your question, sir.
Thank you. My question is, a standard MFJ 125-watt tuner has two big capacitors. In the center is the rotary inductor with ABCDE selections on it. When I'm listening on the 10-meter band, the net, if I turn the rotary inductor a little bit, I can make the single strength go way up, which is telling me that I'm not getting the good contact through the contact switch there. And before I destroy something, what I had done was I bought the thing, took it apart, everything was dirty, and I used the standard tuner cleaner on all the contacts. But now I'm wondering if I did the right thing. So the question is, what should I do at this point? I cleaned everything on the inside. It's got standard tuner cleaner. And when I put a little pressure on the rotary switch and move it a hair one way or the other, all of a sudden the thing will come right up out of the noise. So I think I'm making contact rather than something else, because I tried it at every switch position. Back to
N2OEL. Yeah, I don't know which model you have, but that's not an uncommon thing on a number of devices, not just MFJs. So, yes, I think you've put your finger on the problem, as it were. Anybody else have any comments?
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB.
And Richard.
Noel said he used tuner cleaner, and you got to make sure that the tuner cleaner doesn't leave a residue on the contacts. Radio Shack used to have an infamous tuner cleaner that they had that always left a residue on the contacts, and it created more problems than it cured. You may have to, you know, take power off and put a little burnishing tool in there and clean the contact faces off, and go from there. This is KC2PYB.
Good advice. Good advice. Anybody else?
Dennis, 2K.
Jim Go?
Yeah, especially on something like that, that allowed it to be silver-plated or anything plated. You don't really want to remove the plating itself, but you want to get rid of the oxide. And you want to be careful not to bend the contacts any farther away than they already are. If you can get to them, sometimes you can squeeze them together a little bit. But bond paper, you know, a good hard-toothed paper, maybe with contact cleaner soaked, is oftentimes a good burnishing material, rather than something that's, you know, really intended to remove layers, is you really don't want to remove anything other than that, I don't know, atomically thick corrosion layer. You still want to try to leave the silver or gold or, you know, whatever the actual contact material is intended to be. Then it's okay.
You don't want to either rub off or chemically cook off the desired plating. That's good advice. Anybody else?
Mr. J.E.K., partly with a question, partly with a comment.
Go ahead, Don.
Okay. I presume this only happens on the one switch position that you're speaking about. Other switch positions would work all right. One thing we did with the telephone company, somebody mentioned, is bond paper. As a matter of fact, they used to package it in envelopes, the little strips of bond paper that you would use in relay contact. Of course, we had other kinds of burnishing tools, too, but most of we used both types, depending on the relay. If it's just that one switch contact, like it could be out of bent a little bit out of alignment, maybe, or needed a little bending back. We used to have relay adjusting tools for that kind of stuff, too, but in that case, you'd have to check it out and see if it happens on all the other positions. You just have to work with it, I think, or maybe just exercise, or maybe there's some other cleaner. I had the thought, maybe some of those people can contact us. Would alcohol on a be a good cleaner, because that might leave a residue? I don't know. Would that be a better alternative than the other contact cleaner? Back to Matt, 72JK.
That's good, yeah. You know, I remember those packages, too. I'd go visit COs, to physically clear contacts with a piece of bond paper. Absolutely amazing. All right. Anybody else with comments? It's all good. Who was that?
That's 2K. While alcohol is an excellent cleaning material, the normal household 70% rubbing alcohol does leave quite a bit of residue. If you have anything that's more pure alcohol that doesn't have wintergreen and all that sort of foolishness in it, makes a much better cleaning material and will leave the contact surface without as much contamination on it.
Something like closer to moonshine is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, if it were only that good. Everclear, how about that?
Hello, yo.
No.
How about carb cleaner? Carburetor cleaner will rip off everything. What do you think?
I wouldn't be worried about residue. Remember, the way those things work is that they can get away with a lot because heat and combustion tend to take care of the rest.
The other thing you have to be careful with is the other side of the problem. Whatever you use for cleaning material, make sure that it does not destroy whatever surrounding plastic material or paint or whatever. Carburetor cleaner, while I suspect very good at removing certain kinds of buildup, you have to be real careful with that because it'll dissolve lots of things, including the box that it's built into, if you know what I mean.
Noel?
I better go for something safe like isopropyl alcohol.
Well, again, there's something as pure as you can.
Work, we use some of this. It says it's 99%, whatever. Just avoid the 70% rubbing alcohol type. It's got to be better than that.
Yeah, you don't want the stuff with the wintergreen, as you said. That would be bad. Alrighty. Anybody else?
W2JK with another comment.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, one thing in telephone work, we had what we call contact follow. Used for contact follow. We watched the contacts on a relay would come up, and they wouldn't just touch, but they would sort of rub each other. And in the sense of your switch, your contact comes into contact with the rotary part, comes into contact with the fixed part of the switch there, and that should actually push. You should actually see that move a little as the rotary contact comes into place. and then go down again as you disconnect the contact and go to the next station on the rotary switch, if you can, if that's available to, for you to see. And that way you can know that the contact itself, the fixed contact, is making good contact with the rotary, the removable contact. And if it isn't, then somebody suggested a little tweak of bending a little bit might so that it is, it does make a better contact. That's possible that you'll look at, so you can try taking a look at that. Back to that, W2JK.
Very, very good point, Don. I always like to try to look at the contact to see that it is actually being displaced, as it were. There's real physical contact. But one of the things to remember, and it's especially a problem on something like an antenna tuner, is they're not really designed for switching under load. And it's entirely possible that the contact, or at least part of the contact, has been severely burned on the first part or one part of the wiping surface, so that it doesn't make good contact. At which point, it's kind of hard. It's a hard decision to make. You may have to actually remove some real material, depending upon what you see for damage, so that you are getting metal-to-metal contact instead of oxidation. You know, so obviously, an arc will leave a heavy oxide layer that's not easily removed, as easily removed. Trouble is, now you're into base material, not intended contact material, and it will go bad relatively quickly over time. You end up with an unsatisfactory situation in the long term, although you can always make it work, at least for the short term. NS2K.
Okay, you know, before, I never quite got the answer to the one question. Is this the only position that's screwed up, or do the other bands have this problem too?
Bear in mind, it's a tuner, and I have this one dedicated strictly to the 10-meter band, just so that I can leave it there and use my 520 or 530 once a week, tube drive rig, backup rig. That way I use it once a week, and it gets to work out once a week, and I know it works. And so I just leave the tuner sit there, and it was only been used in the one inductive position. Once I got the antenna tuned, I haven't touched it.
Well, I think you should probably check it to see if other taps or other inductance positions, if you will, work.
I think I'd have to use, ohm meter for that.
No. You gotta use it under workload conditions. Try loading your 10-meter antenna on 15. Just set the rig on 15.
I know the other positions work only because when I tune it, you know, you tune it more, and you get the best signal, and then you keep tuning it less. So you go back and forth until you get the highest input signal, and then you try tuning up the rig. Well, eventually I found the right position. It's just that it gets better when I moved it up just a little bit and put pressure on it, which made me think that perhaps something there was not quite making good contact. So that's what I was wondering. Back then, this is N2OEO.
Yeah, it sounds to me like that switch position is toast. By the way, I have a similar problem, and let me make sure I have this done before we go anywhere, but I do have a similar problem, which I'll bring up in a moment. It wasn't my question of the night, but I'll say that for later, but in the meantime, anybody have any more on the shall we say, flaky contact tuner?
That's
W2JEK.
Go ahead, Don.
You know, thing you could do, let's say you the contact number one is the supposedly defective contact on that tuner. You could swap the wire with contact one and contact two. Contact two, let's assume is good. Now, of course, unless you would have the correct 10-meter tap, but it would be at tap number two, and the tap that you would use for number what would be number two would be the defective tap then, rather than vice versa. You could swap it out that way. And as much as a dedicated tuner for 2 meters, 10 meters, that might work for you. You could try that. Back to that, W2JK.
That's another good fix. I like that. The other thing is you could do is if this is a tuner that's seen better days, is do a shorting switch between two positions, and just that way at the flip of a switch you can go and add that inductance and you'll be fine. But maybe that'll meet the requirements just by creating a shorting switch between two positions, and that way you don't lose the functionality at all. It's just to kind of butcher up the tuner a little bit, if that makes sense to do. Alrighty. Any other comments? That was pretty good. We went 20 minutes on a subject. So here's a related subject that I've been reading about and never experienced until very recently, maybe earlier in the summer, and I would see have a bit of a reprise of it now. Apparently, there is a difference in the American Molex connector and the Japanese Molex connector, and in any case, the Molex connectors change form over time, and flex and heat up and cool and do all sorts of fun things. And lo and behold, that 6-pin power connector on the back of your radio can turn into an instant nightmare, where you'll key up the radio and it'll all of a sudden cut out. That's happened to me once or twice tonight already. So I have to go adjust the pins on the Molex connectors. Apparently that's been part of the reason why that and miniaturization is why change to this new connector that's on the back of the popular HF rigs now. So it's something to think about. By the way, Devils are up 4-2 over the Rangers, empty net goal with about a minute left, so that's a good thing. Anyway, I heard the Yankees aren't doing too well. I haven't looked recently, but just for reference. In any case, if you're not careful, you can develop that condition where it'll pit and arc and do all sorts of things and create a high resistance. And actually, over time, it can get worse and actually can actually cook the back of your radio if you're not careful. So that's why I mentioned this connector issue. If you have Molex connectors or something pretending to be a Molex-like connector, that's fine. You should be careful to maintain them properly. Keep in mind that the American Molex is ever so slightly different than the metric Molex, just what you'd like to know. So any comments on that, please call K2BAR. Alrighty, so here's my question of the day. Question of the day is, what is involved in being an operator at the New York City Marathon? And we have at least two operators here, and I'm thinking that we might want to have more. Talk about it if there's other people who've done it. I mean, I think at least three of us have been operators of the New York City Marathon for one function or another. So I was going to ask Jim, and then Noel, and then I'll pitch in. And if somebody else has been an operator, I'd like to hear them too, as to what they've done at the New York City Marathon. how they've had to equip themselves and what they've what they, you know, both technically and also personally for the marathon, you know, what do they do? So NS2K, if you're still with us, this is K2BAR.
K2BAR, NS2K. What Noel does and what I've done the last several years are very, very different. In my case, I don't need to bring a whole lot of equipment other than headphones and a clock and notepads and whatever, that sort of thing. As normally I'm sitting at a desk in a trailer doing logistics net control. I normally do, I'm one of the Log South controllers, and we've got approximately 13 field positions along the route that we're dealing with, plus the precursor and the follow-up vehicle and so on that are servicing, physically delivering material, picking up materials from each of those positions, and coordinating where they are, if there are any issues, we'll provide backup communication services for medical emergency, although those legitimately belong on a different net. Sometimes phone or the other net may either not work or be congested. Anyway, we can fill in there and provide a back channel for those communications. Noel, on the other hand, hang on. Noel and all the folks on the field, and I've done that a few times, especially for half marathon or some of the other events, where I'll actually do the location position. And depending upon the event, sometimes it'll be a single person. I've done that for New Jersey Marathon and for men's trials and various others, where you're reporting on what the current activity is or if there's a problem. But it's a bigger deal with the marathon, and maybe Noel should contribute to that since he's done that several times in recent years. NS2K.
Noel? Just had one of those power cycles. I've lowered my power all the way down, by the way. So, Noel, what do you think?
One thing that Jim didn't tell you was he does half. I don't remember if he's north half or south half. Jim, which half do you do?
South.
Okay. I worked three different locations. The first time it was mile 18. One of the interesting things they do is the first 3 miles don't have anything, but miles 4 up through 25 have huge clocks, and they got to be synchronized. And so you figure, what is it, 4 through 25 is 21 clocks, times 2, one on each side, so that's 42 clocks have to be synchronized so the runners know where they are. So what they'll do is they'll tell us to set the clock. It's rather old, it's about 30 years old, mostly mechanical. It's like the old flip clocks almost, and the letters are mechanically moved. We have to set it to like 3 minutes, and then our mile master will count down for us and say, seconds and, 5 seconds, 4 seconds. And we all, 42 of us, hit the button at the same time, so all the clocks are synchronized for that particular run. And we set it once for the women, once for the men, and I think we did it for the handicap too. Anyways, that's one plan. I did mile 18 the first time, and they had told me that it was to be noisy, so I got noise-canceling earphones. Wasn't sure if they'd work, but there were bands within a half a block of me, north and south. Oh, God, the noise was horrendous. When I put on the earphones and flipped the switch, the bands, the drums disappeared. It was a lifesaver. Let me drop it for a second. The noise is atrocious. There are people 6 to 8 deep on the sidewalk on both sides, and they're all screaming for somebody. That was the year somebody proposed at the mile 18 marker, and we had a good clue because the TV crew was there. It was scheduled. The other thing I did was I went to Radio Shack and bought stereo cables with the ends, hooked them up in such a manner that, well, I had two, in effect, stereo females. I had the headphones, stereo headphones. I had a 2-meter HT in the left pocket of my vest, 440 in the right pocket. I carried two 2-meter HTs, two 440 HTs. One I had a set to 2 meters local as per the man captain's instruction, or mile captain's instruction, so I had local. And I'd like to listen to, you know, the medical net, the race net, whatever. We have all the frequencies. So I set the other HT, whichever one I was listening to, in the other side. I arranged the connectors in such a way that if I plugged into the one that had yellow tape, both stereo headphones were to that one HT. If I plugged it into the other one that didn't have the yellow tape, I should back up. One plug had a one mono plug had yellow tape, one stereo female jacket had yellow tape. If I plugged into the yellow tape female plug, my stereo headphones were connected mono to the one HT. If, on the other hand, I plugged into the other one, I got the left pocket in my left ear, the right pocket HT in my right ear, and I could differentiate. It was really handy. I could listen to all things going on, at the same time be alert for the mile captain. When the race got hot and heavy and the noise level got too high, I had to go to mono and listen strictly to the mile captain. The next year, it was a little too much for me, so I went to mile three. I don't remember, blue, mile three. There's red, blue, and green. I missed all the action. The lead runners went on a different one. I kind of like stood there with my group. We couldn't have been there more than half hour after the last race started, and it was all over. Everybody was gone. It was too boring. So the next year I went to mile eight, which is just about right. You're out of there between one and two. It's all done. The race is interesting. It's a little bit troublesome getting home because so many things are closed. It was in Brooklyn. I should say, the first one was right up, mile 18 is in Manhattan, mile 8 is in Brooklyn, and mile 3 is just after it gets off the bridge there. Lots of fun. It was really interesting. I love watching the rhinoceroses run by. One guy pretended he was the lighthouse. I have no idea how these people get a 6-foot-high thing on them and run the race, but the rhinoceroses, I saw them on mile 18, I saw them on mile 8. I did not see them on mile 3. Back to that, this is Ed Tulio.
Are you one of those guys that started at the start and then ended up on a subway?
I don't think so. They run. The rhinoceros has been running for many years. There used to be a team, according to my compatriots there, a team of 8 or 10 of them, with Save the Rhinos. The last few years, they're two diehards. They have a styrofoam rhinoceros costume that still has got to be hot as heck. But they run in. And if they made it to mile 18, they must have probably made it all the way. I can't believe it. At mile 8, I saw a guy wearing a lighthouse costume. It had to be, and it's fun to be doing something and, you know, give back to the community. This year, I'm hooking, I'm taking my my ICOM 208H, hooking it up to my, on my scooter, because I really can't stand that much anymore. And this way, I got 7-mile range on that scooter, and I'll probably be assigned to the medical tent. Whoever gets assigned to the medical tent takes the call to dispatch the EMTs up or down the course as needed. We pretty much cover the whole course. If somebody falls, as you can imagine, when the race is going full blast, you cannot cross the race course, not without causing somebody to get really injured. It's just too many people running too fast. You're causing accidents. The police, on the corner that I was at, there was at least 8 policemen, like 2 or 3 on each of the 4 corners of the intersection. It is really busy. They're very strict about not allowing people to cross. So amateur radio works really good. Somebody falls, they report it to either the mouth captain or myself. I'm on the medical frequency. I'm sure that that's where I'll be this time. And the 440 frequency. And I'll report it if necessary, or I'll turn around and tell the EMTs there, and they'll go depending on where it is. Okay, back to that. Thanks, William.
Okay, anybody have any comments?
NS2K.
Go ahead, Jim.
The good bad part is it's really too late to volunteer for this year. I've already got my my picture ID here for the finish area, and the police department really needs to know, you know, all of the volunteers, especially like the radio volunteers, way before this. So it's really too late at this point. But it is a great experience. It's absolutely amazing the number of runners and total number of people involved, both as volunteers and participants. It's truly a spectacular event and well worth supporting. And it's okay.
Anybody else? All right, let me chime in here with a few. For a number of years, going back maybe, I don't know, 15 or more years ago, I would work the marathon for a whole bunch of years, actually. And that was back when runner dropouts were just amazingly large in number. Today, there are much fewer dropouts during the course of the event. And so it was decided that we would try to use packet at selected points to supplement the voice net, and we did. It worked very, very well. It led to some other things that improved as well, which included, you know, access to the green bar listings of cross-referencing runner number with names and stuff like that. There were some interesting issues related to that, and getting an electronic copy of it was ultimately done and had to be done with the greatest of discretion. For a whole lot of reasons. Number one, you had personal information about every runner, contact information, next to kin, all that good stuff. And I made it a point every year, as soon as the event was over and the question stopped happening regarding this and that, within the ensuing week, I would purge my disk drive of that data. Just for sensibility's sake, it's good practice to get into. We don't tend to think that way these days, but we probably should, because the more old stuff we leave around, the more problems you create for personal security and such. In any case, it was a lot of fun doing a marathon that way. Hold on. Before doing that, I was a voice operator at mile 21, is it? It's the one that you come into the Bronx, and it used to be by a schoolyard, or by a playground, in the South Bronx, and I was there because I was a former New Yorker and knew the area, blah, 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 and one year, we just had a bunch of guys from the neighborhood come and sit down inside my old van, which was kind of interesting. We had started to take certain gear out, and they kind of noticed it, so they kind of sat down in the front seat of my truck and said, "Can I have that? And can I have this? And can I have that?" And that got to be a little intimidating, and they really didn't want to leave, and we really didn't want to get shot or stabbed. So, I made a discreet inquiry on the matter to a family reunion, and I remember one operator didn't know what to do. It was before cell phones were ubiquitous, and he went over to a city-provided ring-down phone, picked up the phone. Actually, it wasn't a ring-down, but it had limited numbers you could call, and he dialed 911. And I had two housing police there in a matter of minutes. It was amazing. And they kind of cleared things up and kind of supervised our departure. So you do have to have your wits about you, but, you know, this was at twilight in the South Bronx, and, you know, again, we were trying to do the honest thing and try to stay there for as many runners as possible, and got a little thin on the volunteers. There was no one to reach out to and get assistance, but there were plenty of community people out there and still plenty of runners, even though you would have expected it, let's say, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that most people, and there's no daylight savings time back then, so it was getting kind of darkish, so we had some issues and kind of worked it out. We were back the next year, everything was fine. Anybody else have any comments? Alrighty. So I guess that kind of bags and tags that question. It's been kind of fun talking about that. Any other marathon adventures people want to just, you know, root out, or other public service event kind of things that, you know, where we've, you know, had the pleasure of operating over time? Any good anecdotes along that line? Okay, well, two things that people should know. Jim's right, it's way too late to sign up for the marathon as a volunteer this year, unless Steve has a magic position for you somewhere on the hinterlands that doesn't have a tough credentialing problem. I would kind of doubt it, and even then, my guess is that's done. But, you know, with over 400 operators, it's pretty exciting to have be part of such a large event. And it really is an amazing event. I don't think people realize that Steve wrote a guide, a communications guide for this thing. And part of that was copped, for lack of a better term, for use in multiple sclerosis events probably 20 years ago by yours truly, and has found its way into things like the how-to guide for running an MS bike tour and things like that. So it's really kind of amazing. I don't think people realize the intellectual capital that not only rests in Steve, but in the body of people who've been doing the marathon either continuously or on and off over the greater than a quarter century now. It really is amazing as to where that information and where that body of knowledge finds its way into what areas, other kinds of events, etc. So we're very blessed to have that expertise here, both contributing and also continuing to learn themselves. And, you know, Jim and Noel are two of them. So that's pretty cool. If you do want to sign up for the marathon next year, wait about 2 weeks and ask Steve about 2 weeks. Don't ask him anything about the marathon next week. I'll tell you right now. Steve goes home and crashes after spending a hotel night crashing in the city. So he doesn't even go home after the marathon. He's incapable of driving. And spends another day or so crashing, last I looked. So that's pretty wild stuff. So anyway, Jim, since I know you're up early for the marathon, how is your Monday morning after the marathon typically spent?
Actually, a few times I've had to go to work afterward on Monday. And I've always made the Barra meeting afterward. A couple of years I was president. Anyway, that was interesting. Near death, after having been up since, like, I don't know what, 3 o'clock or something like that. It makes it an extremely long day, and Steve's is even worse because he has to be at the start line and, the other end of the Verrazano, by, I don't know what it is, 2 or 3, something like that. The, race management, as it were, gathers out there. I know there was a strong push this year to try to postpone that some, although there is a contingent that has to be there much, much, much earlier. They're going to have over 40,000 people. It's the 40th anniversary of the marathon, New York Marathon, and they're going to have over 40,000 runners. That's just amazing. The aerial photograph of the Verrazano is just staggering. Anyway, and I go back in 93, I actually did it myself. I know it's kind of silly, but anyway, I actually did it myself. And to be a part of that is just amazing. Well, to support it in some way is also amazing too. But I know it does, it beats Steve, you know, two-thirds to death. He's invested so much emotional capital in the whole thing over the years. It's really tough. NS2K.
Yeah, well put. Well put. One of the other things that people, like anything else you do for a very long time with a close team, is that you develop a lot of friendships. And, I used to watch for several years running Fred LeBeau and Steve and Alan Seinfeld and others, interact, and then others as well. And being part of that is kind of a privilege just to watch. And I remember great line, absolutely a great line from Fred LeBeau. There was a discussion about uniform and components, etc. And Fred had a kind of an impish kind of way of being, and he also had kind of a devilish way of commenting sometimes. And his comment was, "You can turn the world with a T-shirt." And the interesting aspect of that comment, he wasn't talking about spinning it on its axis. He was talking about turning in the same manner you would turn someone in a spy ring. It was kind of amusing. And it was basically saying you could corrupt someone with a T-shirt. So it was fascinating. I've always remembered that little quote. All right, so this is the part where we get sociological and stuff like that. I said, this is the tech net. So I said, anything related to radio communication, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the things that depend on it. The human condition also is part of that. So anyway, I don't know if anyone has any more comments of that or other areas they want to go on. Go ahead. It's K2BAR.
NS2K. A few of us know Alan from way back. Unfortunately, he's since deceased. Absolutely amazing person, and very, I'd say Fred LeBeau is since deceased, and absolutely amazing person. Alan Steinfeld, a number of people at Vera have met, as he's participated at least once, and I think more years with our field day, working with Steve. I think he may have had something to do with a certain amount of smoke coming out of Steve's amplifier. Anyway, but no, excellent, excellent contest operator on top of everything else. And unfortunately, in the last few years, he's been kind of pushed out of the marathon, New York Marathon side. It is getting more difficult for him to do it as well, but management being what it is, anyway. So he's been involved more with some of the other marathons, doing communication and race direction and so on, in Atlanta and Miami. Also, up-and-coming marathons along the East Coast. So the tradition continues and expands in more directions. NS2K.
happens. And, you know, Alan can transfer that information to nice folks in other places and not be stuck with a lot of the heavy lifting that he used to do related to the New York City Marathon. So that's a good thing as well. Any other comments about this? Yeah, sorry about that. Any other comments that anyone has? Sorry, I've kind of beaten that one to death. Just one other note. I think everybody knows that CQ Worldwide is this weekend. And the C6APR team perished in an aircraft accident the other day at the Somerville Airport in South Carolina. They were on their way to the Bahamas to operate C6A. PW2GJ, Ed K3IXD, and Randy K4QO, who's, and also Dallas of my W3Papa, all perished in that on takeoff of some sort of aircraft issue when they were departing. If you've ever worked, I've worked Pete and I've worked Randy in Dallas at various times, boy, very impressive operators. So unfortunately they're not going to be with us anymore. And it wasn't like they were doing anything risky. They were just getting on an airplane, and the airplane didn't do well. And, you know, your time has come. The other thing is, someone should be aware, one of the two guys who helped, get permission for us to start building out a radio facility up at Camp Terrell, he wasn't a ham. His name is George Fedor, F-E-D-O-R, from Clifton. He passed away of complications from his diabetes and infection in his feet. And basically it overtook him, and he passed away today. So we'll miss George as well. So it's kind of a sobering thought, but I don't know what happened to the Yankees. Maybe someone can fill us in with that. And the Devils won 4-2. Against the Rangers. So in my world, all is good except for the deaths recently. In any case, enough of that. Anybody else have any more comments? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, any late check-ins? Anybody lurking who wants to make themselves known? Okay, just let's see, what do we have upcoming? First Sunday of the month will be a Barra meeting. I think the Hudson Division Luncheon is coming up. Please call Bob Javits or contact Bob Javits, WB2AIU, regarding that. And I believe if you are coming to the Barra dinner, which is heavily subsidized in early December, we're going to, you need to get your $25 a person to Bob for that purpose as well. Should be pretty nice. Any case, anything else for anybody? Any other club notes or whatever, please call K2BAR. Alrighty, well, I would like to thank the assembled mob of, let's see, who do we have here? NS2K, N2OEL, KB2VVY, K2DSL, KC2PYB, K2DEN, W2JEK, and KC2SQP for all checking in tonight. This is W2TTT for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for their use of their repeater. And there'll be some fun things happening on this repeater over the next couple of weeks, and more to follow. It'll make the net operation even more exciting pretty soon. So thank you again, and this is W2TTT. I'll stand by if anyone wants to chat after the net. And have a good night, everybody. Godspeed.